Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Of course, the challenge is, where are you going to get it hosted? That was a challenge I had until a friend of mine recommended Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you've always wanted to make a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. And be sure to let me know when you get it started, because I'd love to listen to what you have to create.
The Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast, episode 4, with interview with Melissa Miko. Hi, I'm Michael Whitehouse, the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast, produced by Patrick Howard of Four Unicorns Designs. Today we have a great interview with Melissa Miko with Niantic Tax, soon to be Delightful Tax. She's not your typical accountant. She gets a bit more into the business aspects and actually runs a couple of other businesses of her own and does a little more than your typical boring accountant. She's a very interesting accountant. I think you're really going to enjoy what Melissa Miko has to share with us about taxes and all kinds of other stuff. So please enjoy this interview with Melissa Miko from Delightful Tax.
So I'm here with Melissa Miko of Niantic Tax and Accounting, although I believe that name is going to be changing. But hello, Melissa.
Hello. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing very well.
Very good.
Glad we're able to get together and get this interview going.
Me too.
So tell us about the name of your firm is changing?
It is. So this is a business that I bought about 3 years ago. And the way that I came into it was that my mentor, who is Mark Hightower, CPA in Niantic, his sister also had an accounting firm, and it was called Niantic Business Services. I changed the name to Niantic Tax because we do so much more than businesses. Probably 80% of my clients, of my tax family, is individuals. So I needed to reflect that. Next, I'm expanding. Business is expanding, and I wanted to not hold on so much to the Niantic name. Love Niantic, grew up here. But I have clients out of state, I have clients out of the country, nobody can spell Niantic, and I serve people in a lot more areas. So I did a little bit of market research. Not everyone's crazy about the name, but the new name is going to be Delightful Tax and Accounting.
Mm-hmm. Which from a marketing standpoint, you know,
it's pretty bizarre. Yeah. But it's pretty bizarre.
But I think it kind of fits that niche. And one thing I always talk about is that whenever you have a brand, you're never going to capture more than 10% of the market unless you're, you know, Coca-Cola. So
True. If
you can make 10% love it, if 30% hate it, doesn't matter, because you're going to capture that 10% and you're going to capture it aggressively.
That's a good point. Because who thinks that taxes can ever be delightful?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we try. If you come into our office, we've got the aromatherapy going. We got hot tea. We got little cookies and candies. You know, we try to make it really comfortable for people. The vibe we're going for is kind of like a spa or like an upscale therapy office.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, paying taxes really isn't delightful, but we are the only people in the world with the name Delightful Tax, and we do try to make it as delightful as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, yeah. And this is about differentiating.
It is.
You always want to figure out what makes you different from everyone else. I work with a lot of realtors and financial advisors who are financial advisors are forced to by their rules to all sound the same.
True.
Realtors aren't. They just choose to.
Sure.
And instead of focusing on I will call you back within 30 minutes, they focus on the same generic things. And I think a lot of accountants, if they do any marketing, it's just kind of biggest refunds or...
Oh, yeah. There's some really bizarre ones out there.
Something or other.
Which is not always ethical either.
Right.
So,
right.
And it's not always true. So accountants, we're bound by a lot of rules federally and at the state level. But like as far as marketing and putting ourselves out there, nothing. I'm out for myself. I'm the business owner. I'm the firm owner. I can do whatever. So
well, that's good.
It's good.
Well, kind of good.
Yes.
But it seems like a really clever thing to differentiate yourself in that way from every other tax place.
I think so.
Pretty much saying the same thing.
That's the idea.
So very smart there.
Thanks.
So since I, of course, for those of you who listen to the podcast, know I record the interview first, then I record the rest of it, then I come up with how to promote. My plan is that I'm going to promote this episode by talking about, Melissa's going to be sharing some great tax tips for business owners.
Yes.
And you're also going to be talking about tax tips at the Southeast Connecticut Business Conference.
I am. So I will be able to give you a little preview of that.
Okay. So go ahead.
All right. To start off, It is March. It is mid-March. I just got through my business tax filing deadline. It was insane. Now I have to focus on all of my individuals due April 15th, unless they do an extension. First off, I want to say, when is the best time to find an accountant? It is not now. It is not mid-March. I am willing to help anybody who comes through my door. I would love to meet you, love to talk to you. But keep in mind that if you're looking for a new accountant or looking for an accountant for your first time, a great time is like June. Give us accountants like a month break between April 15th and maybe May 15th, maybe the end of May. June, we're geared up, ready to get back on the horse. We're ready to go. June's a great time to meet. One reason is if you are employed, we can look at your W-2s. We can look at your pay stub to make sure all your withholdings are looking pretty good. Tax laws change every year, so we can run a couple calculations for you and, you know, make sure that you're having enough withheld. And if you're not, we can make a plan to help you catch up for the rest of the year. So it's not a shock in January or February or March when you realized you didn't have enough withheld or whatnot. Same thing goes for business owners. The best time to find an accountant is before you start your business. Of course, this isn't always the case. It's not the first thing on people's minds, but it's great to have somebody like me. I'm a tax accountant. I do a lot more than just taxes. But whether you're an attorney, accountant, some kind of business coach, have somebody sit down with you and kind of get you through the compliance issues, because you will run into them if you don't find somebody to help you. It's just, you know, growing pains. So number one, get an accountant sooner than later. But earlier is better than later. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you that.
So the best time is
June. Nah. I like June.
Well, of course, it's June.
June is great. Yep. June through November is a great time to sit down, because we'll have the time to meet with you and really take the time to do calculations or you know, really take the time to talk to you. So that's good. One thing that I find is I am really big on compliance. I can tell you the law. I can teach you the law. I can teach you how to follow it. My clients, it's up to the individual on what they do and what they decide to do and not do. But I love to teach people about compliance and what they need to be doing, because a lot of times people realize there's something that they're not doing that they should be doing. And that's scary to a lot of people. Nobody wants to go to jail. Nobody wants to get fines, interest, penalties. So I can help sort that out and kind of give you like a calendar to tell you what to do when and how to plan for it so that you don't run into any problems.
So for the very small business, obviously larger business, they have a bookkeeper and they got some kind of system.
Sometimes. But would be surprised.
Okay. But for the business that's below the scale of having some kind of system, what would you – is there any software you'd recommend or tools or strategies?
There is. I mean, any software that you're comfortable is better than nothing at all. But I work a lot with QuickBooks Online. Mm-hmm. If you have an LLC or even a sole proprietorship, I highly recommend the Simple Start. I do not get paid from them. I don't get anything from touting them. I just find that QuickBooks is owned by Intuit, which is a solid company. It's not going to disappear. It's not like one of those free apps that's, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's not a very robust program. It's certainly not perfect. But for the price and for the ease of access, you can actually invite an accountant or two or three sometimes, depending on your plan level. That way I can see things in real time. It pulls things in from your bank account. It shows all the transactions. I can answer questions.
Now, is that the QuickBooks Self-Employed?
No.
Okay.
No, this is Simple Start.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the QuickBooks Self-Employed. This is Simple Start.
Okay.
It's a step up. It's like a real business owner's QuickBooks. Again, it's not a super expensive program, but it gets the job done.
And why aren't you a fan of the QuickBooks Self-Employed?
Oh, goodness. I don't think that it offers enough reports to give you the information that you need at all. I don't think it has the capacity to handle a lot of small businesses. It's more like if you wanted to do bookkeeping for yourself personally, that would probably be okay. Yeah. But not for a business.
Okay. Yeah.
Cause opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause self-employed, actually as a Lyft driver, you can get self-employed for free.
A lot of people can get it for free.
Which seems like that's what it's for, is Lyft driver who needs to track their mileage. And
it is.
You can track your mileage, your transactions, and that's it.
It is. But again, like even for instance, the mileage thing, it's really hard when you invite your accountant or you pull it up. You know, sometimes people bring a laptop in and they'll get online. The way the miles print out is kind of kooky. It looks kind of crazy. It's not nice and neat. It's not a report, which, you know, is hard. If it ever came up in an audit, it would... not be the clearest way to present the information. Oh, interesting. So,
well, that's good to know and terrifying because I use QuickBooks self-employed.
Well,
I figured since I had you, I would ask and be like, hang in there. Why isn't the right thing?
Simple Start's not bad.
Okay.
And there's other mileage apps out there, mm-hmm. like Mile IQ and that kind of thing. I don't get paid for touting any of these. I have never even used one. This is what my clients tell me. But I always recommend, whether it's a mileage app or a credit card or a bank account, like, print it out every 6 months. Hmm. Don't just let it ride in the cloud, hoping that it's going to be there when you need it. Mm-hmm. Because if 3 years goes by and the company changes or the policies change, you don't want to not have your information.
That's a really good point.
I love being paperless, but there's a reason for paper. And taxes are still there. We're behind the times. We still need a lot of things in paper, physical mm-hmm. paper. Yep. And that's something I can recommend.
Well, that's true for a lot of things, paper backups.
Yeah.
Because you're... And it's amazing, at least now the cloud is more robust. It's got backups and...
Backups, absolutely.
But whereas, you know, in the old days, and some people still have, you know, ridiculously important files on their laptops.
Yes.
With no backup. And they're just carrying around, and they lose their laptop, and suddenly...
It's just gone. Doomed. So I was once told, have at least 4 places for your data. Mm-hmm. So it could be on your hard drive, on a backup, in-house, on the cloud, and maybe in paper. That's mm-hmm. kind of what I do, and... You know, recommend that.
Yeah,
so.
Your Google Drive works well for that because it backs up everything on your computer if you use the...
And your phone. Yeah. I love Google Drive.
I don't think it stores in the phone, though. You can get it from the phone. But,
yes.
But at least backs up cloud on your computer.
Exactly.
So you've got that backup. And of course, the backup is against, you know, Google servers, which are probably well backed up.
Probably pretty good. Exactly. Yeah,
since their entire business model is built on accumulating data, I don't suspect they're losing a lot of data.
Probably not.
I think they're like, where'd this terabyte of data go? I don't know.
Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, probably not. I know.
But my wife sent me a message the other day and accidentally deleted it. And I'm like, it's okay. The NSA has it if we need it. We'll just, I'm sure it's in a server somewhere.
Someone's reading it and, you know, looking at it somewhere. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that does it. Brings us to, you know, the privacy concerns. Obviously, when you walk into my office, everything is confidential. However... when you are sharing data, there's so many ways, you know, email it, fax it, mail it. I mean, there's problems with every way you can share data with somebody. There's a way to hack it, and that's mm-hmm. really scary, and that's something that we're constantly working on to make it more and more secure. So every year, my IT guy says I'm very secure, but I always have that on the front of my mind that protecting client data is a big concern for me.
What is the information that's most... social security numbers and...
Yes. I think the scariest thing out there is actually your kids' information. Your kids' social security numbers, dates of birth, previous addresses, that kind of thing. Because what a ill-intentioned party can do is they're going to get that information and they're going to hold on to it. They could hold it for years. And you won't see any activity. It's not like you're immediately going to have, you know, a credit card charge or your kid's going to be opening up something because they're, you know, they're a kid. They can't. But years could go by and that information's still out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with all the, you know, facial recognition data, like, it's just, there's a lot of risk that's out there that I think hasn't been tapped, but will be. And we'll have some nasty surprises as what comes up and who gets what in the future. Mm-hmm. So... that's my number one concern is protecting the innocents.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. Yeah, and I've heard some stories about, like, credit cards being taken out in the name of 18-year-olds when they turn 18.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that kind of thing because they're not checking their credit report because they don't
have one.
Have any credit to worry about.
No. So exactly.
Yep, that gets messy. Now I believe that Niantic Tax, soon to be Delightful Tax,
yes.
is not your only business.
It's not. My partner and I also have a landscaping company, but even more fun than that is I have a goat business.
Goat business.
A goat. I have dairy goats, yes. So we breed, show, sell goats. I make goat milk soap sometimes. We have milk, goat milk for sale for pets and craft projects. We're not a USDA licensed dairy, but we do the goat thing. So right now I've got 7 Nubian goats.
So that's not a typical accountant thing, right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the last accountant I worked with did not have any goats.
No.
I don't think. I mean, maybe she had goats. Didn't tell me about them.
Maybe. I mean, my pictures of my goats are all over my office, so you can't miss it.
Yes.
Can't miss it. But
of course, your office in general is a little bit different.
It is. Some people call it Jumanji. I love my house plants.
Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah. Yep. House plants and the tea and the whole thing there.
Yep.
So what do you plan to be talking about at the conference?
All right. So I'm going to talk about the way business owners can really step up their tax game. There's a tax strategy that I think works for most of my clients and probably most people in general. It focuses on the issue that the self-employed have. If you are just self-employed, or you just have, you know, your person, sole member, sole proprietor, LLC, you are going to be incurring not only income tax, but what people don't understand is on the income tax form, you know, the 1040, you do it every year in April. There's also your income tax, but there's also the self-employment tax, which is an additional 15.3% tax. So they kind of sneak that on there. Totally different type of tax, but it's on the income tax form and you got to pay it. And it really stinks.
And of course, that's the one where normally your employer pays half and you pay half.
Exactly,
but yes. But you're your employer, so yes. You pay half and you pay half.
Exactly. So what the IRS is trying to do is they're trying to recapture 100% of the employer and the employee paid Social Security and Medicare tax.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some tax loopholes, totally legal, to get around that. And they actually might benefit you as well. And they even kind of benefit the IRS, too. So everybody kind of wins. They get less of your money, but you have other benefits and you do better. So I'm going to be talking about that a little bit.
So it's something that would allow someone to save more than $97.
Yes.
So the conference could pay for itself if somebody goes to your workshop.
Oh, easily. Easily.
Nice.
Yes. So, yes, you could almost come to the conference for free. You could almost get paid for coming.
Wow.
To the Southeast Connecticut Business Conference if you come to my talk and hear me out and see what see if my strategy works for you.
What a deal.
Yes, it is.
So they can learn about sales and marketing to get more money and then talk to you about keeping more money.
Exactly.
That sounds like an excellent investment.
I think it is. Definitely. Investment in yourself in the long term and your family. So very important.
Great thing about investing in yourself is you can keep that.
Yeah.
No matter what happens.
And you can invest it in somewhere else and grow. It'll grow. So that's the idea.
All right. And so the question, which I intended to put at the end of every interview, forgot for the last two, but remembered this time because I wrote it down. Is if you could go back to the beginning of your career and tell yourself one thing or a couple things, what would you tell your early self?
Oh my gosh, that is so easy. That's a wonderful question. Okay, so my background is I love animals, I love life, I love all kinds of things. You know, I would have loved to go to college and get paid for petting kittens all day. But that is not a real job. So I had to pick a real job, and accounting was the one that I think I got suckered into it. My accounting professor, I did really, really well on my exams. Said, oh, come on, you got to be an accounting major. And I feel like I was feeding my ego a little bit. And that's how I ended up here. Went to UConn. It was great. But I would go back. I would say when you turn 18 or maybe even younger, start a business. Start an LLC. Doesn't matter what you do. You can always repurpose it and kind of shape it and change it. Mm-hmm. But oh, my goodness, if I knew that then, I would be so much further ahead. I would say, when you're 18, start an LLC, start a business, learn, find mentors. The way I grew up, my parents are wonderful, but they're both in the public education system.
Mm-hmm.
They got one job. They worked for the employer their whole lives, retired from that employer. I didn't really have a lot of business or entrepreneurial mentors in my life. And I wish I could have, if I knew to find that or go to SCORE or some kind of, you know, free program or even paid program to find that, I would have done that. I have a corporate background as well. But even so, I think multiple streams of income, even if it's how small it is, you do something on the weekends, you do something one night a week, like that is so valuable. And there's so many opportunities that come with that through meeting people, networking, growing your business, finding out what you're good at, what you need to work on. Start a business.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used for so many things.
Yeah,
including tax write-offs.
Yep.
So
you just jump out there, make a fool of yourself,
try some things out. Go for it. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. If you start a business at 18, you're gonna fail 27 times.
That's okay.
But that's okay because you're 18.
You're going to grow. I don't consider it failing. I consider it growing.
Yep.
Learning, growing.
Yeah, so. I listened to Gary Vaynerchuk recently, and he's, I think, 42 now, 43.
Okay.
And he'll meet with, like, 20-year-olds
who are
like, I'm running out of time. I got to do this. And he basically says, with his Jersey mouth, if you're familiar with him, he says, dude, you have as many years as you've been alive before you'll be my age. You still won't be my age.
So
think of all the years behind you. You got that many again.
Yep.
So you got plenty of time.
You got plenty of time. Figure it out, try
it. But of course, as you said, you got to get on the field.
Yep.
You got to start doing something. And
do it now.
And start trying businesses, figure out what works, what doesn't work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that is some fantastic advice. So
thanks.
So basically, just get started.
get started. And I can help you with that. And I even have, what I've done too is I actually have documents. I'm a very soft sell. I really am. I don't expect somebody to come to me, especially a new business, and, you know, pay out the yin yang for services. I'm happy. I will give you instructions for free on how to start a business and all the compliance points that you have to hit. It's a courtesy I do. It's like, get out there, get started. Because my thought is, if you have the tools to success, you're going to do so well. You're going to be so busy doing what you do best. You're not going to have time to do the bookkeeping and the tax work and the compliance work. And you're going to remember me and you'll come back to me and pay me. So that's kind of my idea is give first. Maybe it'll come back.
That's how I ended up hiring my first accountant. Same idea.
Yep. I love it.
So that's some great advice. Well, it sounds like they're disassembling the building around us. So that must be our cue to it. And it's so hard. Almost every interview I've done, something's happened. Usually it's a dog.
I heard the dog bark.
Yep. It's often a dog barking, but here it is, heavy power equipment. That's, cause we went to the room up in the corner where nobody was.
Well, I'm hiding. I know.
And they followed us with heavy equipment to chase us down.
They did.
So,
I know.
So hopefully you'll hear a follow up after this and they won't have caught me. But thank you very much, Melissa Miko from, is still Niantic Tax?
Legally, yes. Okay. Secretary of State, it's Niantic Tax.
But do you have the URL now for Delightful?
It's soon to be Delightful Tax.
Okay. So what's the website for that?
Delightfultax.com, but actually the best way to reach me is actually at the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Delightful Tax.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
That was a really fun interview. There's a lot of... Yeah, a lot of accountants out there, and we think of an accountant, usually think of kind of a buttoned-up, sort of dull, one-dimensional sort of person, which is a stereotype. Most accountants I've met are pretty interesting, but Melissa's is not your typical accountant. Most accountants don't raise goats, for example.
You know, I'm in an accounting class right now,
mm-hmm.
and my accounting teacher is amazing. Like, he's hilarious. He tells great stories, like... He has us over to his business for mm-hmm. like study groups and stuff. Like, he's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. So it's definitely kind of a new generation of accountants, I think.
I think so,
and,
too.
And they do more than just do your taxes. I think they sort of become de facto business coaches.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot that happens there. It's really important. And I'm really excited to have her at the Southeast Connecticut Business Conference because she, I think, can make that accounting and taxes, which are usually sort of dry, she can make it very interesting, which is really important. Very important thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we have our question of the week, which was actually asked to me, as I mentioned last week, my book is being used at the Mystic BNI as their curriculum. And part of what they talked about that meeting was in a chapter of the book, I talk about if you're at a networking event and there's someone there who's, sort of a respected figure and an august personage, and you're new in business, how do you approach them? And in the book, I suggest that you should approach them and say, I'm new to business. I'd love to get some of your time so I could get the benefit of your experience. You know, kind of pick your brain, get some of your knowledge. And most people who have gotten high, way up in the world of business, they've usually gotten there by helping people. So they're open to sharing their knowledge and sharing their expertise. And they understand the more people they help, the more people are available in their network to help them in the future, potentially.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So they're pretty open to
that.
But the question that came in was, if you're not new to business, how do you engage the important person? Because, as a student, as the young person, you always have that kind of like, I'm young. And
I don't
I'm,
know anything.
I'm in college. Could you help me
yeah,
out?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it's almost the extension of the Girl Scout selling approach.
right.
Please, sir, would you like to buy a case of cookies? But if you're, if you're in your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, you've been in business for a while, but you still want to connect with this, CEO of a company or whatever.
Right.
How would you do that? And basically the answer I gave is that it's still fairly similar, because ultimately it's, while you don't have the necessarily quote unquote cute factor of being a student or new in business, right. you still have the differential of knowledge.
Right.
So you're still offering them that respect and saying, I respect your knowledge. I respect your time. And I would love to get the benefit of that knowledge. If you could share, I'd love to get your advice on next steps I should take or how you should help me.
Sure.
So there's an organization called SCORE. Which used to be senior, I believe, Senior Corps of Retired Executives is what it used to stand for. It now stands for nothing because
really?
Many of the people in SCORE are not retired. In fact, I am now a SCORE volunteer, and I am definitely not retired yet.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, because they wanted to bring in younger mentors and younger advisors.
That's a smart move. Yep.
Well, yeah, because first off, there's a limited array of retired executives you can get in.
Right.
And also, if you want to get experience like modern marketing, social media, that kind of stuff, the retired executive may not have the most recent information on how to market yourself on LinkedIn or social media or podcasts, those kinds of things. So, so even still, people, you know, they love to share that knowledge. All the SCORE volunteers are volunteers. They don't get paid for it. They're not there necessarily to build their business. They're there simply to teach and advise. And I mean, I joined SCORE because I love speaking and teaching. I love to get up in front of an audience and share knowledge with them. And so it's a perfect fit. They have audiences. I have knowledge. Yeah. And so, of course, I'm going to work with them. But so a lot of people in business, if you approach them and say, hey, could I get your advice? Could I get your insight? We'll be happy to be like, yeah, you know, buy me lunch and I'll give you a lunch worth of advice.
That's a hell of a deal right there.
Yep. And of course, if they're up in business, they can probably buy their own lunch. So
true story.
But still, they're usually willing to, you know, as long as you fit in their schedule, because of course you get busy as you get successful.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's still, they still respect that especially if you're not trying to pitch them anything, sell them anything, if you just want to get the benefit of that. And along those lines, also later in the book, I talk about how to get a job through networking. And it's that same principle, but at scale. So instead of talking to one person, you go to everyone in the industry you're trying to get into and say, hey, I'm trying to break into this industry, or I'm trying to move up, I'm trying to whatever.
Right.
Could we grab a cup of coffee and me get you advice? And the key to that is, of course, not everyone's going to do it, but some will meet with you, be happy to give you advice. And what you're going to do is make your problem their problem.
You know, if you
build good rapport with them, then you're going to say, yeah, I'm really trying to get, you know, get on the ground floor of whatever. I think the example I use in the book is funeral directors. You know, I really want to be a funeral director, because a friend of mine was actually trying to get into that field.
Okay.
And didn't really have the background. And it's one of those fields where you can go to school, but then you have a degree and you still don't have a job.
Right.
But you could also intern, get the skills, never get a degree, and get into the field. I think you have to get licensed, but you don't necessarily have to get a degree for it, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm sure there's probably some mortician who's like, that is completely wrong. You need a master's degree. So if that's true, send me an email, and that way I'll know someone's listening. So I occasionally just drop wrong facts so that people will correct me over email.
Actually, that's brilliant.
It's a marketing trick.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. That happened with Grotten Mystic Neighbors a couple weeks ago. My content coordinator was saying she was a little concerned. She wasn't sure something was entirely right, but it wasn't. It wasn't an issue that would have been a problem, but it's the kind of thing where someone might say, hey, that's supposed to be this, not that. I think it was a grammar issue or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, leave it. Worst that happens is someone complains.
Yeah.
And then we know they're reading.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. And of course, we do know people are reading that, because we do get feedback on all kinds of things there. But it reaches a few more people than the podcast does at this point.
That's just a few.
Very effective at that.
I'd say a couple.
Yeah.
A handful.
A few thousand.
That's a handful.
Yeah. If you have really big hands. Yes. So I also have the recommendation this week. Our recommendation this week is a podcast called Sales Babble with Pat Helmers. So Babble is sales tips for non-salespeople. And he brings on every week an author or some kind of expert. Well, really, any expert is an author, because it's not that hard to write a book, as I've discovered. So he brings on a author and expert in some aspect of sales, whether it's networking on LinkedIn or closing or building rapport or whatever it is. And has
sales is hard, dude.
Yep. Yeah. And just has this great little conversation with them. I enjoy it because, of course, I do a workshop myself, which is sales skills for non-salespeople.
Right.
Because there's plenty of stuff at the high end of, you know, you're a professional salesperson. Here's some more super professional techniques.
Right.
And that's great if you're a professional full-time salesperson. But a lot of people, and even I think actually Pat's background himself is that he's more of an engineering background who stumbled into sales.
Right.
Because eventually you often end up in some kind of sales role.
Well, if you're working for yourself.
Yep. And even if not, you know, you're an engineer, but then you end up being a project manager, and the project manager has to go to the clients and is kind of the front line of getting them to buy more widgets or jets or whatever it is. And suddenly you're in a sales role.
That's
Surprise. So. If you're working for yourself, you're of course the chief cook and bottle washer and salesman and accountant and bookkeeper and
yep. And all of it.
And everything else. So, you know, those sales skills are really important, which is why I'm teaching a workshop of sales skills for non-salespeople at the Southeast Connecticut Business Conference.
Love it.
On April 25th. And I'm hoping to be teaching more of those workshops later in the summer and fall as well. If any listeners out there know of a venue or would like to attend such a workshop, all you have to do is find me a place to give the talk and an audience to give it in front of. And that tends to be a way to lure me into an audience. So if you're part of an organization, a chamber of commerce, something like that, and you're like, hey, this guy knows what he's talking about, let's invite him out here. If it's New London County, I'll generally waive my speaking fee because it's in my market anyway. If it's further out, there'll be a cost because I got to get there.
Right. That makes sense.
I'm not coming out to Michigan for free to talk.
Hell no.
No, they got to pay me for that. Nothing against Michigan. I'm sure it's a perfectly nice state.
It's beautiful.
I've never seen the sun shine on it, but the only time I ever went to Michigan was this past September. I was driving to Milwaukee, and I was driving across, I think it was I-80, I-90, I-80, whichever one goes right under the border. And it was about time to get to stop. I punched into Google, find me the cheapest motel around here. Cheapest one is right over the Michigan border. I went in at night. I left before the sun came up. So I've only been to Michigan at night.
Oh, well.
I slept there in the dark. So I suppose it's possible that the sun does shine there. I've just never seen it.
It probably does.
Or it's an entire state of vampires.
It definitely shines. I've been there.
Okay. All right. So
I lived in Ohio for about 3 months.
Okay. So the sun does shine there.
Yeah.
New Englanders are, however, like vampires because they can't cross running water.
True story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's funny. You talk to people and they're like, what? But there's a river. As up in Montville, the Economic Development Commission. And the running joke was that how close Groton was and how people, you know, don't like to travel from Groton to Montville, Montville to Groton. And the joke was, we should build a bridge. It'd be great if we built a bridge across the Thames River. That would be really helpful.
It's going to get worse if they put a toll over that bridge.
Yeah. Although the toll's only going to be like 30 cents to cross the bridge.
Still, that's 30 cents I'm not paying right now. That is 30 cents I'm not paying right now.
Just anything to make an excuse.
How many times do you cross that bridge a day?
How many times do I cross that bridge a day?
Yeah.
Probably 2, maybe 4, depends on the day. Sometimes yeah. 0.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Well, that's it. I'm driving all over the place, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I cross it probably at least 4, 5, maybe 6 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It adds up.
But, you know, it's going to cost $500 million to fix that bridge.
True story.
So 30 cents to cross a $500 million bridge. And actually, I think it's $500 million to fix the one span that hasn't been fixed yet. I think it may be close to that much for the other span also.
I was going to say, they haven't started working on the other side, have they?
It's a really big bridge.
It is a big bridge.
It's, I think, 2 miles long?
Yeah.
Largest bridge in Connecticut. Bridge. So it makes sense that it costs a lot to fix that bridge.
Yep.
That's something that people don't realize, how much stuff costs.
Yeah.
I saw a comment on Facebook, because they did a $10 million study on tolls.
Yeah.
Because it's a big state. Yep. Big study. And they haven't actually done the study yet. The money is just waiting to be spent. But somebody said they should have spent that money to fix the roads. There's a little bridge down here in Groton Long Point.
You mean the $10 million study?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bridge down here in Groton Long. If you know Groton, there's one bridge into Groton Long Point.
Right.
And it needs to be repaired because it's approaching the end of its usable life. And it's going to be somewhere between $6 and $8 million to fix that. The bridge is like 85 feet long. It's going to be $6 to $8 million to fix that bridge. So $10 million is nothing against the transportation budget.
Aren't they working on the one right over here that gets onto, what is it? It splits off onto 184, I think. It goes onto the highway, 95.
Well, yeah, they're doing the bridge over the Amtrak.
Right, that one.
But I think Amtrak pays for that.
Oh, really?
Or the state pays for that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's a state road.
Interesting.
Yep. But so now that we're totally on tangent, because anyone listening from outside of Groton is like, I have no idea what they're talking about. Amtrak, 184, Groton Long Point. What are these places? Google Maps. Look it up on Google Maps, and you'll see.
Just Google Connecticut tolls, and you'll know.
There's been some drama on that. Actually, if you go to my other website, thecrisiscontrolgroup.com, and the blog, I have an article about I tied it back into what we talk about.
Yeah, I have
an article about the communication side of that, because if you look behind the scenes, staying out of the politics, the facts are you need money to fix these roads.
True story.
The expected lifespan of many of these roads is 50 to 70 years, mm-hmm. and they're 50 to 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all built around the same time because there's a building boom 50 to 70 years ago.
Yeah.
So we need to effectively rebuild the entire infrastructure system. That's going to cost a lot of money. It's got to come from somewhere.
A lot of money.
Tolls are a place that can come from. you could raise gas taxes, but it's a small state, people can go over the border. Yeah. But so there's been a lot, there's not a lot of really good options besides tolls. The problem is that the Democrats who own the state are not communicating this well at all.
No, they're doing a terrible job.
They're still operating under the 20th century principle of get a couple of good op-eds in the paper and you'll sway public opinion. The problem is most people do not draw their opinion from public, from the paper anymore.
No.
They draw it from social media.
Yep.
And they don't have a social media messaging strategy.
No, they're doing terrible right now.
And they didn't. So my well,
at least in this state.
Yeah. Yeah, my article opens with two things are going to come of this. One, they'll create a toll system that will solve the transportation funding crisis. And two, they will create a Republican majority in the legislature.
Probably, yeah.
Because they're not explaining what they're doing, and the message is going to go out there, and the Republicans are going to hammer. Even the Republicans who are supporting it because they know it has to get done,
yeah,
they're voting for it. But in the campaign, they're going to hammer.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to make them wear it, and they're just not messaging it. Not messaging it properly. And hopefully someone will hear this and be like, we should call that Michael Whitehouse guy. He seems to know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe they will. They probably won't. But at least I've got it on record. So, yeah.
Well, yeah.
So after the next election, I'd be like, I told you so.
I told you.
I told you. You need to communicate like it's the 21st century because we're a fifth of the way into the 21st century now. It's 2019. The millennium did not turn recently. That was a long time ago.
I'm going to a talk. One of my macroeconomics. That's always been a hard word for me to say. Macroeconomics teacher. He's doing a presentation on the Connecticut tolls on Tuesday. I'm pretty excited to go see it.
Hmm. Yeah, and, it's probably very interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and like it's in psychology too. If, you know, 30 cents doesn't make that much of a difference when you get right down to it.
Right.
In fact, actually.
Well, when I lived in Rhode Island, I lived in Newport, and yep. there were three bridges to get off the island, and two of which for a while were tolls.
Mm-hmm.
But the main Newport Pell Bridge was for residents, it was like 80, 88 cents.
Yep.
Either way, for non-residents, it was $4.
Wow.
And even the 80, 88 cents, it was enough for people who lived on that island to just never want to leave the island.
Yep. Well, and that's, with my car, so I drive a Civic at about 34 miles a gallon,
right,
which means it costs about 10, 15 cents a mile just for gas,
right,
and then wear and tear and whatnot. Probably comes to, once you figure everything, it's 20 cents a mile to operate the car.
Right.
Well, the bridge is just over a mile long. So to cross the bridge still costs 35 cents now.
Right.
But I think nothing of it.
Right.
But if there was a 30 cent toll, I'd be like, whoa, 30 cent toll.
Double. You just doubled.
I don't want to pay a toll.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody thinks about what their car operates per mile to drive.
Right.
People say, oh, I'll just drive around it. I'll get off the highway and go around the tolls. Well, that's now you just spent 60 cents of gas and wear to avoid a 35 cent toll.
Yeah.
But you feel good because you stuck it to the government. Yeah. Which really means you just stole the use of the roads.
I'm going to pay the extra 30 cents. Yeah. And, you know, like, I'm just going to suck it up.
And yeah. And once it's there, you just.
It's going to be what it is. And then I'm going to expect that all these roads and bridges get fixed.
Yes. Yes.
Because if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, the roads better get fixed.
Oh, man.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely. That's the thing. You know, you don't mind paying for something if you get it.
Yeah.
You know, these roads don't fix themselves.
No. Nope.
You know, in town, like the library didn't build itself. The senior center didn't build itself. Something paid for that. We have nice things. They cost money. But you want nice things for your money.
That's right.
Yes. You want to get that value. All right. And the last thing on the agenda here is the question. For you to send to Michael at guywhoknowsaguy.com. The question for episode 4 is, who is the most influential person you have ever had the privilege of connecting with?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Who is the most influential person you ever had the privilege of connecting with? And
that's a good one.
Yep. Yeah, I think locally for me, is the most influential one that comes to mind immediately is Kevin Brown, who I believe is kind of the chairman of the Mohegan Gaming Commission, or he was at some point, but he's very, very high up in the Mohegan tribe, and I met him at the first chamber event that I attended when I first came to town, and he's a really nice guy. He's a army veteran.
Oh, sweet.
So he has a lot of the kind of military operational background. I saw talk he gave about business and the similarities between what it takes to be successful in military operations and what it takes to be successful in business.
Yep.
So he brings, you know, the combination, which has, from Mohegan Sun success, seems to be working very well.
He's doing all right.
Yeah.
He's doing fine.
Yep. And what's brilliant with them is not just their casino, because, you know, you build a casino, especially at the time they built it, you build it and they will come.
Yeah.
But that they were smart enough to say, someday they may not come.
Yeah.
So they very quickly started diversifying. They now consult building casinos other places. They own everything from Smashburgers to office supply or office equipment companies to,
wow.
I don't know the full range of what Mohegan Holding owns, but so they're saying, let's take this casino money and reinvest it into other things.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Expanding they have the new, expo center.
Yep.
Which I think they put in so they could get the car show. It's Jackson Hewitt, I think. Jackson Barrett.
Barrett Jackson,
that's what it is. Yeah. So they needed more space to keep that, which is a major part of it. And,
oh, yeah. You make a lot of money off that, yep. I bet.
But now they have, I think the Hartford Boat Show is now at Mohegan Sun.
Of course. Why not?
Still called the Hartford Boat Show. It's just at Mohegan Sun.
Of course.
Because it's pretty much the best convention space anywhere.
You're not changing that branding.
Yeah. Yep. Hartford-ish.
Yeah, Hartford-ish.
Yeah. No, like up in Massachusetts, you can be 100 miles from Boston and still be considered in the Boston area.
Oh, yeah. Anybody I've ever met from Massachusetts, before I moved to New England, anybody I ever met from Massachusetts always said that they were from Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. Well, as opposed to Los Angeles, where you can be 100 miles from the city center to Los Angeles and still be in the city of Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. Same with Dallas and Fort Worth. Like, Dallas-Fort Worth is a big, giant metroplex, but everybody from that area, mm-hmm. When they leave Texas, people ask them where they're from, they say, oh, I'm from Dallas.
Yep.
Just because everybody knows, oh, okay, Dallas.
Yeah, close enough, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but Los Angeles, actually, the city limits are very large.
Yeah.
In that, which is a unique quirky thing there.
Giant
and then it feels even larger because you can't go faster than, like, 7 miles an hour on the highway.
So,
yep. All right, and that's all we have for episode 4. So this is a shorter episode to make up for last episode being really long, because we have no prescribed length. That's the great thing about a podcast.
We do whatever we want.
And you like it. And if you don't like it, we give you your money back. Because it's free. We give you double your money back. So I'm Michael Whitehouse. This is the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast. You can find all my good stuff at guywhoknowsaguy.com. Get on my email list and follow me on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Definitely look me up on LinkedIn. Our producer, the other voice you hear here, is Patrick Howard.
That's me.
Of Four Unicorns Design. And he does both audio design, such as you are hearing, and also visual design, like business cards, postcards, all that marketing collateral stuff mm-hmm. that you need now and will always need, because being able to hand someone a business card will never go out of style.
True story.
So I am Michael Whitehouse. Thank you very much for listening. And don't forget to do something awesome today. JV Connect is coming up quick, December 12th and 13th. If you are looking for a networking event where you can meet people who aren't looking to just pitch you or take, but actually want to collaborate, build strategic partnerships, joint ventures, maybe even find some mentors, some coaches, people to support you, accountability partners, who knows? If you're looking for good people in an environment that's not stressful, but is set up to give you a lot of great connections in an efficient amount of time, check out JV Connect. jv-connect.com. That's jv-connect.com. December 12th and 13th, 2023. We'll see you there.